welcome everybody to the Thursday, November 10th, 2016 Fiscal Impact Committee meeting. All goes well, this will be our last meeting of the fall because we canceled the two December meetings. We'll pick up again in the spring, dates TBD. Let the record show, we have 9 members present, plus myself. So 10, I forgot to count Sam, sorry Sam. 10 present. And so we have a quorum and then some. So pretty good. Okay, tonight we're going to do, since we have a quorum, I'm going to keep the agenda in the order it's in. I was going to reverse 3 and 2 if we were close, because I know somebody, and I didn't catch who it was, has to leave early. You got to leave early? Okay. And if we were contingent on you for a quorum, I was going to do item 3 first, at least everything but the schools in item 3, because all our previous votes are really straw votes. And tonight we have to affirm them as real votes because those are the recommendations that will go to the Board of Supervisors, okay? And that's what we're going to do in item 3, but one thing is not settled with straw votes yet, and that's what Sam's going to do and whoever else in item 2 tonight. So let's go ahead and just pick right up with item 2, okay? Are you leading this, Sam?
Since I'm the only one here, I'm
I figure since you're the only one from the schools here.
I've just been volunteered. Thank you, Mr. Bona. Just so everybody knows, I'm going to try to be brief. There's not a lot of new information in here, but there is. I think, like the county staff, I'd just like to review some of our past enrollment projections and the accuracy that we had. Also like to go over some of the areas in the county as far as our current enrollments and our projected enrollments, where they're heading, and also, you know, just briefly go over the main, components of our facility standards for elementary, middle, and high schools. And with that, I'd be happy to take any questions that you might have regarding public schools. And we also have a little bit of a discussion item at the end to talk about metro schools. And this is in conjunction with the planning effort that's currently underway. We've been working with Ricky Barker and his group. We've been attending the Silver Line meetings as well as sitting through TLUX. So it's going to be an interesting endeavor, but I think one that both the schools and the county will welcome in the long run. So with that, what I'd like to do is basically, right now we are at 79,001 students as of September 30th. We are looking at our enrollments increasing through 2022-23. And you'll start to see that we are expecting and anticipating that our overall enrollments are going to start to decline. In part, what we're looking at right now is that our bulge in our biggest cohorts is currently in middle school and it's working its way through. In theory, we should be looking at having some enrollment increases in another 5 to 6 years, particularly if you begin looking at the millennials. However, millennials are failing this country. They are delaying childbirth. They have record numbers. It's now over 32% are living at home with mom and dad. So as you get delays in child rearing, it ultimately means there will be fewer students. So again, typically, we'd already be anticipating enrollment increases from those men and women as they mature and start their families, and that's not happening. So again, what you're seeing here is our elementary enrollments are starting to level off system-wide, and as that starts to occur throughout the school division, we're going to see lower increments of growth as we go through. Next off, what I'd like to do is kind of point your way, and again, this is, I think, the county staff graciously share their enrollment projection accuracy, and I thought we had to do the same. And so basically what you're looking at, if you go all the way over here, you're looking at our FY08, which is our September 28th enrollment, and it came in at 50,478. We had projected 53,396. The next year, we ended up with 54,047. So what you can start to see over here is that annual rate and what our projection is and our margin of accuracy. And so we've generally been at 1% or slightly lower when you start looking at these annual projections. And what I can tell you is we have gotten close. 1 year we were within 3 kids. However, that number does not, you know, you think that's pretty good, but then again, because of the policies we have as far as open enrollment and some of our areas of growth, we still had some inconsistencies for our individual school projections, and that's something that we always strive to work on, but again, it's not one of the easier things to always nail down, even though we monitor and we track these students every year. One of the next things that I'd like to call your attention to is what happens when you look at our projections over a 5 or 6 year period. And so what you're going to look at is then, well, we did our 07, our FY08 CIP, our out year projection was 66,887. In the end, we ended up with 65,668. So we were within a couple percent, but again, we had missed that by 1,200. And this table also illustrates some of the harder things that you get at when you start looking at projections. Whoa, this is really sensitive, so I apologize. So again, what you start to see is how we can be surprised by economic events. And what I really call your attention to is you start looking at projections that we were looking at and forecasting before the economic unpleasantries. And 6 years out at 68,000, and then we were down 4,271 kids. Again, the following year, even though the projections were updated, and again, this is a function of some of the demographic momentum that you see, it was an error of 5,900. And now what we're starting to see is, as we've recovered, that pendulum starting to swing the other way. So we try to adjust these numbers so that we can have better accuracy, not only for us and our planning efforts, but again, we work jointly with the county, on our capital improvement plans as well as the budget. So it's important that these numbers do try to marry up as best as possible.
So what do you think is a good window of accuracy? What I mean by that is 5 to 6 years is nice, but from the time it takes to find land and build a school where we need it, what is that? Is it 3, 4 years, 2, 3 years? What's the window where we think we have to be pretty darn accurate to really project new schools? I realize the CIP is 6 years. I realize that. But what do you think the window is to kind of say, we're going to be way off with schools in this area if we aren't pretty darn right?
Well, I would say if based on, you know, the experience we've had with looking at finding land, I mean, you're looking at basically a 4 year window.
Yeah,
you need a year to go ahead and budget it. And then once you go through that budgeting process, you need another year to year and a half to actually come back to the respective boards and get consent. And then
right.
Once you actually enter a contract to purchase it, there's a study period that
due
you have
diligence.
To enter into.
Right.
And again, that study period length really depends on whether or not it's a commission permit, special exception, those sorts of things. So by the time you actually own that property, realistically, you're looking at about 4 years. The thing I think that we have going for us is that, you know, we're able to track pretty well, and we maintain, you know, kind of a constant monitoring of development. So we know, for example, within developments, how many building permits have been taken down. As soon as an application gets in, we begin monitoring it. So we have a real good idea as to what our exposure is and where it's at and how that impacts existing facilities and what we might need in the future.
That answers some of it. So one of my questions was what do you, so you, for like FY13, you start with 65,668 your actuals. So what are some of the assumptions that go into your, how do you make your projection for the next few years?
We actually have that in our CIP, but some of the things that we're looking at is the overall health of the economic activity, what local forecasters are, you know, indicating as far as job growth. You know, again, we monitor birth rates here in the county. We actually geocode them so we know where the kids, if they're in the county, where they should be. So that also helps us with ours. And, you know, again, what you have to look at is dropout rates and things like that. So, again, we try to pull all that together as part of our projection process. But, again, you know, a lot of the information that we look at is similar to what the county is monitoring as it does its growth projection.
So, Sam, just for the sake of continuity, you still use COGS very heavily?
Not so much, more the local forecasts and our own seed generation. I think for us, one of the biggest things, impacts that we have is really employment and the areas where we have a lot of development activity.
And second question, just to make sure, the numbers you're using, are those all the students or just the students in public schools?
These are only public school students. That's my job, not to work with a private school or doing like that. We do, however, monitor. If you want to homeschool your child, you do have to register with Loudoun County Public Schools. It's a state requirement. So we do have tabs and know the number of students who are being homeschooled because of that. As far as private schools, I mean, we have relatively small numbers, so they're not impossible to track down, but that's not my day-to-day.
Paul the Sixth.
Doesn't ask the question.
But let me say this. Remember the purpose of this exercise. It's capital planning. Yeah. We're planning capital public schools.
Right.
So we're tracking public kids in public schools.
That's why I like to have consistency.
But that's just...
Yeah, I mean, that's... We have it. Yeah.
And that, it's kind of a sort of a general question. Does something like a PVI coming out here, does that factor into longer-range projections because they're going to have... 1,400 kids in the school, and how many of them will come from Loudoun? Does that factor at all into it?
You know, what we typically see is a bump from grades 8 to grade 9 because we don't have secondary private schools here. They're minimal. I mean, that's something we'll continue to monitor, but again, when you start to look at the overall quality of the schools, we've had other private schools open, and it really hasn't made a significant dent in our enrollment. And, you know, we're looking at that, we're monitoring it, but in the long run, if you have a couple hundred kids attending a private school, it's not really going to impact ultimately our decision whether or not we need to begin looking at or constructing a public school.
Having just approved Paul the Sixth a few weeks ago, it's my view it has almost no effect on our public schools for a variety of reasons. Number one, it's two phases. The first phase is 1,200 students. The second phase is 2,000 students total, okay? Number two, those kids will be coming from all over. Remember where Paul the Sixth is right now. It's in Fairfax. And those kids are still going to come here because the way the diocese works it, they have their own private busing system from the various parishes. And those kids will be bust from a Fairfax parish and this Fairfax parish. And I don't think that there will be a big uptick in the kids attending it from Loudoun who don't already attend it from Loudoun, is the point. Okay.
No, I'm just curious. So, as not just that specific school, but just as an example of.
Well, it's the biggest private school we have
it's gonna be right,
coming
exactly.
up in the county, but I still don't think it's going to make much of a difference.
Over time it will, but not initially.
I'm not convinced
I'm
it will overall.
Time,
no,
it'll shift to more loud.
No, I don't think so. Not much. Not much.
I think the only thing that would really significantly affect our schools would be if we took a pretty steep nosedive, and I just don't see that happening. I mean, I think public schools. I mean, in the 20 years that I've been here, it has been one of the big attractions for businesses and people moving here
it
in
is.
The schools. And I don't really see that changing. We've got a good school board. We have longstanding support from the Board of Supervisors. So I just don't really see that changing significantly in the near term, let alone in the long term.
So the question I had was, I know you consider a lot of economic factors to project. What is the acceptable, we're never going to be 100%, I get it. But what is the acceptable margin that is acceptable that it doesn't become an issue of planning purposes?
Well, I guess, you know, from my perspective, you know, we always strive, at least for our annual projection, to be within 1%.
Annual within 1%.
Yeah, and that's really because of the reliance that we have not only for the capital programs, but also the budget.
The budget.
And you know, over the time that I've been here, and this certainly hasn't happened in the last probably 5 to 8 years, but it used to be this, well, you're going to overinflate so that you get more money in the budget, or you're undercutting it. And, you know, quite frankly, as a staff person, you don't have any dog in that fight, because no matter what you project, you want to be as accurate as you can, because there are, you know, real ramifications from this, you know, from, you know, our parents and from the constituents that the board serve, and ultimately they all serve the same thing. So we strive to be as accurate as possible. When you begin looking at, you know, sort of longer term, I mean, we are trying to keep that within, you know, under 8%.
Under 8%.
Yeah. But I think what helps us is that because we have been monitoring land use applications for a long time, we know where the areas of activity is, and I think we've, in working with county staff, we've always narrowed that down. And it's really a matter of how soon will those kids be here to trigger the construction of that particular building.
Thanks.
I do forecasting for defense contracts and stuff in the revenue development for three and five years and stuff, and we're nowhere near 8% over our 3-year and 5-year plans.
Right.
This is a bunch of stuff, so.
Right. It's pretty good. That's actually pretty good.
5% out of 6 years is pretty good.
And if you notice, where they're a little bit off typically is where the economy kind of took some weird turns.
Yes.
Well, we were off with other things when the economy took weird turns, if you remember.
Completely tax revenue, too.
Yeah, including revenue. So, I mean, yeah.
Okay. With that, I'll move on.
Please.
Basically, this is what we as a group are going to be looking at and voting on. And just very briefly, our typical elementary school that we're now building houses between 900 and 1,000 students. That building is typically 100 to 115,000 square feet. Ideally, we'd like to have 20 acres plus or minus.
These are your new proposed standards.
Correct.
They are not your current facility standards.
Correct.
I want to point that out. Read the memo on top.
Yes.
Square footage varies a little bit. But
well, of course it does.
And as does the capacities. One of the things that I will readily acknowledge, once we've been able to convert to a two-story elementary school, it has facilitated us looking at and constructing schools on smaller sites that would not have been considered before. And perfect example, if you've ever been in Leesburg and go by Douglas Elementary School, that's a great example of that. And so again, it does provide us a lot more flexibility, maneuverability, and we also have a very small site, 10 acres or so, on the Arcola Center site. So again, going to two stories like we have at the elementary, we also now have a two-story middle school prototype that houses between 1,350 and 1,500 students. Square footage is about 185 to 200,000 square feet. And again, ideally, we're looking at 35 acres plus or minus. And for our high schools, it's a capacity range of 1,800 to 2,000. The buildings are typically 290 to 310,000 square feet. So that's our prototypical facility. And what I can say is the numbers and the size of these facilities has increased over the last 2 decades. For example, when I arrived here, they just moved from a 600 student to a 725 student facility. Then it went to 800, then it was 840, then 875, and now we really are building the largest elementary, middle, and high schools in Virginia.
I was going to ask you, so I know we are discussing standards overall, but I'm just trying to think the population in the eastern side, right, and the land availability and where the growth is going to happen, like Ashburn, Dulles South.
That's, we project all of that in excruciating detail.
Like,
and you don't want to
years.
Know the closed sessions we have over trying to find land parcels that can accommodate these eastern schools, okay? If you look at our CIP, you're going to see that just about every school in there right now is Dulles North, Dulles South, because that's where the growth is, and we've planned those out quite well. As a matter of fact, we just worked with the school board. They were in a closed session with us a few weeks ago, and the two boards approved land for high school number 9, HS9.
Yep.
Right. We don't, schools don't have a name until a certain later in the process, so we number them until they have a name.
Yep.
So that is planned with great detail. But remember, the school board has to accommodate for, you know, cluster.
Well,
you know, certain elementaries feed certain middles, that feed certain high schools, but that because of the growth, and you know this, and for 15 years Ashburn went through it, there's constant redistricting in those high growth areas until we can get the schools to kind of steady state.
So, Ralph, so even if we say the standard is 20 plus, you may end up building something for 17, 15 because it's two stories.
Two-story schools are relatively new for the county. Maybe four or five right now. I think Moorfield Elementary was the first, Moorfield was the first elementary.
We have Moorfield, now we have Cardinal Ridge.
Cardinal Ridge.
Madison's Trust.
Yeah.
And Douglas, a few others.
So, yeah.
I mean, we've changed and evolved, and I think that's been good. And
which will lead to that metro school discussion at the end.
Okay. Next up, what I was just going to try to do is run everybody through some of our planning areas. And we have Eastern Loudoun, we have Ashburn, Dulles North, which many of you would probably equate with Brambleton.
Brambleton.
And Dulles South, again, that's basically our area south of Route 50. And then we have Central Loudoun, which is really anchored by Leesburg.
Yeah.
And then we go back to Western Loudoun. And what is interesting is most people assume that Eastern Loudoun is built out, but when you look at the units and stuff that are approved there, and I think the combination that we have seen as far as housing affordability, this is one of the areas that we monitor because of the potential for change in what we already have that's approved and not yet constructed. And so as we go down this Silver Line process, this is an area that's on our radar screen front and center, just because we've got a lot of much older schools in there, older chassis, smaller hallways, and all that kind of stuff. And so we do have, for example, in the Riverside, it was the Lakeshore development.
Waterside. The board approved that maybe 18 months ago.
Yeah, but I mean, there's a proffered site in there. So
there
if
is.
We need to pull the trigger, we can.
And then to give you an example, the reason I was late coming to this meeting is Dory and I were meeting with a developer who has come with an application near the Route 606 Metro Station. And forget the airport arguments and all that for a minute. But they have a proffered school site in the application.
So a developer can offer a school site because there's no restriction?
Yes, there is. The new proffer legislation changed all that, but we were able to get an exemption near the metro areas, and this is near a metro area. So that's the simplistic answer.
Yeah, this has been submitted before.
Actually, this was submitted, this was a pre-1 July submission, so it's grandfathered against the proffer legislation.
That's a big savings for the
land. Land's expensive, especially in Eastern Loudoun County.
But again, this just gives you an idea of what we're looking at as far as our student enrollment numbers are concerned. The next area is Ashburn, and I think one of the really nice things here is that we're really starting to see our enrollments start to level out and really stabilize in that area. So,
well, we opened Discovery, we opened Trailside, and we opened Riverside High School, and those were always kind of deemed to be the last three of the final solution for the Ashburn area to stabilize it, and it really has stabilized it. We have all three open now, so this area is maturing, unlike what you're going to see on a couple other slides.
Well, you know, I think the good thing about this, even as this area matures, it may create some additional capacity, ultimately can be used to help provide some relief to some of the Silver Line proposals. And so again, one of the other things that we're looking at and monitoring quite carefully, particularly as the areas mobilize, we want to be careful, not build toward the peak, but really a more rational, steady state where we know that there will always be kids in the facilities, because sometimes when you have schools, you do have to close them, and I experienced this in Albuquerque. It's that community will never forget it. We closed one elementary school that in the height of the 70s had over 1,000 students, and it only had 150. for years and years. So we closed that. We never heard the end of it. But again, that's one of the things that as we're looking at some of these communities, we've got to balance that need. We don't want to over-construct, if you will.
If I ask you, the decline is because people move out of the community?
The biggest influx that you ever have in a development is always when that community is brand new, because you have people moving in, they've got kids. Once that area matures and stabilizes, there are people who are moving out and people moving in, but you don't have that same initial impact. And so your existing facilities in general are able to accommodate those changes. What upsets that equation a little bit is when you have an area like our Eastern Loudoun and Ashburn, where we're getting a lot more students out of there and in older buildings. So then, well, is it an addition that we need, or do we reach a critical mass where we might actually need to build a school? So those are some of the decisions that we're trying to look at as we begin planning and working with county staff on schools.
Yeah. I mean, Broadmont High School is a perfect example. We did additions because we were fairly stable with the other schools.
Okay, next up, this is Dulles North, and again, this is anchored by Brambleton, and as you can see, if it's not too bloody small, and if you print it out, it'll be a lot easier, but this is one of our growth areas, and I think between this and Dulles South, these are the two areas of the county that have remaining growth in it. From our perspective, there's also some good news in here. We believe we're actually starting to see that proverbial light at the end of the tunnel, because the units in these areas are starting to mature and they should gradually stabilize. And, you know, I think from an elementary perspective up here, we have programmed ES31 and we have another school at Arcola Center, ES23. So from an elementary perspective, we think that should be, you know, basically get us into a steady state. And so then what we'll be looking at is monitoring for changes, whether it be Silverline or as the comprehensive plan is reevaluated. If there are changes, for example, to the transition area, those are the things that we would monitor and then adjust our school needs for. But again, I think this is part of the good news, is we are really starting to see the light at the end of the tunnel.
I think what's very interesting on this slide is the northern part of Dulles North is a lot more mature than the southern part of Dulles North. I mean, you're talking elementary schools like Hillside and Mill Run that are in pretty much developed areas right now. Forget Metro for a minute. But if you look at the southern side of this area, like towards Creighton's Corner and those areas, I mean, look at Creighton's Corner. By the end of this chart, we're at 63% capacity?
Yep.
So you're seeing the effect of the southern development against this slide, but the northern side of this is a little better.
But again, we're starting to see the light at the end of the tunnel with Brambleton, and there's really, you know, our Arcola Center is the last significant development down there. There will be some infill. There are some large landowners. There's one large landowner there that owns a significant amount. But unless that zoning changes, if you look at the 1,100 acres this individual owns, you're only talking about maybe a couple hundred units. And so that's something that should be absorbable within, as we look at it. Should that be rezoned? It's a different story. But again, these are the things that we work on as we look at land use changes in the county. Similarly, with Dulles South, this is an area, again, that's growing. As Mr. Bona alluded to, we are getting ready to build another high school. We have a middle school, MS7, which is currently under construction right now, and will open in the fall of 18. And by the fall of 21, HS9 will also open. And so, again, in that area, what we're starting to look at is a few more schools, and again, we should be really at the end of the development cycle. But again, this is also, for us, a period where we would monitor and look at any changes in the plans, significant kind of redevelopment proposals.
Now, I'll also point out there is a move on the Board of Supervisors to see if we can move HS9 up a little bit time-wise. And Matt, I'm not even sure that's got to you yet, Sam, but there are some supervisors trying to see if we can shuffle the CIP a little bit to bring HS9 forward in time, knowing the problem we have there.
We have heard rumors. But
yes. There's some behind-the-scenes work being
from
done.
From a staff perspective, that wouldn't be prudent. So,
well, we'll have that conversation,
too. That's what policymakers do.
That's right.
Okay. So, again, if you start to look at Dulles South, we believe that, you know, we have an elementary school, ES-28, which is going to open, and with this land purchase for HS-9, there's also sufficient property on there. We can add an additional elementary school, and there's even going to be a component in that plan for around 37 acres.
Yeah.
This is all one lot.
When the school board and the board of supervisors met a few weeks ago to get this land, the land can accommodate the high school, an elementary school, and about 37 acres for a county public facility. We'll have to subdivide the land between the schools and the county, but that's something we'll take care of. But it was all one parcel for sale, or all one big piece of land for sale, and so it was a pretty good price for the whole thing, so we said let's buy it all.
With something like that, when you program, you have the ability, when we're looking at the capital needs in the future for how we determine things, does that account for as a, I guess, a credit against future needs for acquisitions or for construction? We kind of went through that a couple of years ago where, you know, we accounted for things that were programmed and funded and future needs. So I don't know what we're talking about there. Is that one of those things on the future, or is that accounted for in the numbers?
The power portion would be a future power.
We don't generally land bank, but this was one of those kind of opportunities where it was one big chunk of land, and it was kind of an all or nothing thing.
Well, I agree. My question is that when we know how much in the future we have to spend, at least we know we're accounting for that.
Yeah, that we have that land. That. Right.
Yeah, okay. We're not needing a cost for that.
Right.
That's correct.
Okay. Next up would be Central Loudoun, and again, this is the Leesburg area that goes up through Luckett's and a little south of town. Again, this is an area that, for the most part, we know there are some pockets of activity, but at the current time, we're not really forecasting the need for additional facilities, because again, in some of these mature areas, as our students move up and through the system, it will leave some additional capacity. So, right now, we continue to monitor that, but if we do have, you know, a surge in some area, we're hoping that we can, you know, basically use attendance and adjustments to avoid constructing a new school. And as many of you know, we have 3 middle schools, 3 high schools. Based on everything that we know at this point, we believe that those facilities are sufficient for Central Loudoun.
Question for you on demographics of things like, I call them the urban areas or infill, like Leesburg or the, I'll call them the metro site areas, the demographics of who moves in there may not generate as many children as what our averages are. I know we got capacity, but does that free up, if the demographics hold true, because I've seen that in Leesburg, and I expect as Moorfield Station comes online, you'll find a lot of people that it's either empty nesters or the millennials who may not have kids. They come in there, they're not generating this, what's typical of a buyer who's in a more suburban or rural area. I don't know if you're finding any of that statistically happening yet, or?
Well, it's funny you should say that. I've heard that argument before. One of the things is, you know, we are starting to see our enrollments level off, and again, demographically, we're going to look like the rest of the country. What is a little, I guess, interesting is that as we've been monitoring generation and students, and you know, we're able to, we know your address, we know what kind of unit you're coming from with the single-family ATAS, develop the new townhome configurations, but our numbers continue to increase. We aren't seeing them decrease, and again, you know, we've heard from some people say after a year, well, we're new, there's only 3 kids here, and then, like, the perfect example I use is One Loud. Within 3 years, we had almost a 150% increase in kids, and so initially they might be unique, but again, they tend to look like other developments. And again, this is something that we're working on with county staff as we begin to look at the impact of the Silver Line unit size and stuff like that. So it's ongoing, but right now it's still a little early to tell, but everything that we're looking at so far is annually those numbers for single-family, A-tash, multifamily continue to creep up. So
I was asking, you know, like the urban infill, like as an example, just from experience, we got 100 households in Crescent Place. And by the statistics information, we should have had like 55, maybe 60 kids. And we have maybe 5. But to Sam's point, well, maybe 2 years from now, it's going to be 150% increase. So maybe you got 10 or 20, but it's still, I'm finding that that's what I was thinking about. Where you've got your future growth areas like Moorfield Station or some of the other things, what the demographics of that?
Well, I want the fiscal committee, I want this committee to take up a different style of housing around the metro stations. But that's something we'll do in the spring, I guess. This is our last meeting for the fall.
Right.
But that will be something we have to take up. I mean, the meeting I had just before this time with a certain developer, the average size of those units is 1,800 square feet, okay? And so the question becomes, is that going to put, you know, what's that? And it's going to be, I don't call it high rise, but it's going to be somewhat vertical.
Yeah.
So do we really account for that type of housing product right now? I'm not sure it's your typical multifamily. It may be something else.
Well, I think when you have a One Loudoun that has a little diversity of product, more so than Crescent Park.
Yeah.
I think you're exactly right. I think you're going to see product that doesn't draw as much, but then you put the single family detached into One Loudoun, and then the kids start coming.
Yeah, then it changes.
And then
but,
you got to just watch the product.
Moorfield Station is more of a urban product.
No, I agree. I 100% agree.
Agree.
Yep.
So, last but not least, we have Western Loudoun, and again, we aren't really witnessing any significant sea change out there, if anything. We're starting to see our enrollments in many of those schools go down simply because it's a lot older housing stock and we don't have a big influx of people moving out there. So it's been a...
Before you, the charter academies. So are you guys tracking, you guys track the kids that are enrolled in those?
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, we do, but again, and I have to project for them because of the budget, since our teachers are still teaching there.
Okay.
But, yeah.
Did you say charter schools?
Yeah.
But remember, charter schools are public schools.
Okay. I guess that's true. That makes
sense. They are.
So, anyway, Western Loudoun's been pretty stable. And one of the things that is interesting is that we're, you know, again, working with county staff on is this Silver Line. And, you know, as we've indicated here, we believe there are opportunities and challenges. And we have engaged an architect, and they're going to be doing, a preview. And here's what one of these, a more metro school or a vertical school would look like and how this might fit your education program. But I think some of the things that you'd have to look at, I guess you could certainly build a school that's higher than two stories. But then again, when you do that, you've got to think about, okay, is it going to be basically an entryway and then we're going to have the offices and maybe it's going to be some special education component and then go K-1-2 and then you've got to think about if there's an emergency, how you can get those kids out, where is the safe staging area for those kids might be. One of the other things that we keep talking about is really how big should these schools be? Many of you know who've been following the school board lately have really put an emphasis on trying to cut down transportation and much greater emphasis on kids walking to school. So if you start looking at, you know, a typical elementary walk zone, and you're talking about a mile, well, if you take our typical prototypical school of 900 to 1,000, and you build that, you might only get maybe 300 or 400 students that are actually able to walk there. And then you're still confronted with some of the transportation challenges. You might have anywhere from 14 to 18 buses. You're going to have a way for those buses to get in, drop kids off, get them into school. You'll need a place for them to stay so you can get them home at the end of the day. Or do you just perhaps build a smaller school that would fit an area where these kids could walk. So then you have to start thinking about not only us, but with the planning department, you need safe pedestrian access so that parents will feel comfortable about letting these you know, little kids walk. Just from an economic point of view, you will be building a smaller school, but you're going to have to deliver a lot of the same services in a smaller facility, which means ultimately that your costs may go up in some of these, you know, metro areas because you're needing more facilities to cover smaller number of kids. And so these are some of the things that we're really looking at and we're wrestling with. I mean, we've talked about already some really unique designs to satisfy physical education credits and, you know, from just basically sort of a semi-enclosed roof with, you know, kind of a fencing or a lightweight material on top so you can do outdoor PE activities. As many of you may know, that Alexandria is just constructing a multi-story elementary school and a middle school site, and part of that includes a structured facility, and they're going to have their PE fields on top of their structured parking. So there's a lot of things that we can do.
Structured parking on a school pass sounds expensive.
Well, Alexandria, right?
Yeah, but they got little land problems, so I guess they're...
Well, we all do. But again, these are some of the thoughts and considerations that, you know, we need our board to take a look at, provide us feedback on, and ultimately we have to get to the Board of Supervisors, because we believe that in order to make this work, you know, both the school board and the Board of Supervisors really have to understand conceptually what we're looking at so that we can plan for it and as well as budget for it and actually construct it. So these are some of the things that we're looking at and working with. And, you know, when you get student generation, that's one of the things that, you know, we're working with Ricky Barker and his folks with right now. So we think it's going to be new, it's going to be exciting, and it will definitely be a change. But right now, you know, this is part of the early planning stages that we're dealing with. But again, I think this is going to be a great opportunity for both boards as we look at the silver line and what it may bring to us. So,
have you ever thought of a PPEA process where you put out criteria about your programs and what the functionality of it is, and have somebody propose something? And I know you, instead of you trying to figure it out what you believe you need, if somebody's invented something better, because this is not the first time.
PPEAs, in my mind, only work when there's a revenue source. Every other one I've seen has been a disaster.
Well, or call it design build, the revenue source is always going to be the county or the government. And maybe it's a combination of land and land together through a bond issuance or something. But maybe I'm using the wrong term, but the term was put out some performance criteria, design criteria that you're looking for. This is beginning to be new ground for here, but it's been done elsewhere.
I think it's premature. It's good that the schools are thinking about this, and I'm very glad they're thinking about this. But at the same time, we haven't even done the Silver Line CPAM. I mean, we're in the middle of it. So we really don't know how these areas are going to build out yet. And there are some applications in, and frankly, we don't know how those are going to end up either. So, I mean, in the application I just met on before this meeting, as I mentioned, you weren't here yet, they're proffering a school site. So we have to determine how that will work. So I think it's premature. The CPAM should be done maybe another 2 months. And the TLOC met for another 6-7 hours on it today. And it should get to does anybody know, is it going back to TLOC or is it finally going to the board? Yeah, special meeting of the board on the 29th, that's right. So, and it's the only topic on our meeting for the 29th is that Silver Line CPAM. It's possible, unlikely, but possible. We could actually pass it on the 29th of November.
So. I want to answer a couple of your questions. Actually, the school board did do a PPA. Evergreen Mill Elementary School was constructed via PPA, and at the same time, Sanders Corner, they were both under construction simultaneously, and the every mill facility was costlier than what we would get with standard.
If you did it yourself.
The PPA was costlier than what we designed big mills.
That's interesting. Bob?
I just wanted to encourage, when you're looking at Silver Line, a really cool project that I saw while traveling was a multi-story elementary school. Attached to it was affordable housing, and I think it would present a really good opportunity to do something multi-story affordable housing for teachers, because we know we have a lack of it, and perhaps it could be at a discounted rate and be part of their compensation package, but certainly would prevent a lot more folks coming over the mountain every day who work for Loudoun County Public Schools from Berkeley and Charlestown and some other places. Just something to think about as you look at some of these sites.
Especially on maybe more urban type of things like that, I think is what you...
Just the thought is, and use tax credit financing for some of these departments.
Sam, just an anecdotal question. Given that we're about 375,000 people in the county, we figure we're going to go to 475,000, 500,000 people. 15, 20 years until you're done building schools?
No, I think we'll be done before that.
less than that?
I mean, I really think, as we look at and monitor what's in the pipeline, I think Loudoun schools will likely be somewhere in the vicinity between about 92,000 to 95,000
students.
Yes.
Okay. Uh-huh. So is there?
Yeah, there's only six more applying.
Right. There are 10 years or so.
Yeah, we're at about 90 schools right now.
If you look at our growth projections, we're going to start dropping like a wave.
So it could be
no. That's not accurate.
So could be there 10 years.
The rate
so
of growth is starting to drop. Yeah. We're still growing.
We're running out. If you look at our chart, by 2040, we're not going to have much to sell, just because of what you're projecting.
Yeah,
supply.
Yeah.
So, I'm not saying it's going to free up capacity for schools, but you got resale and other things going on that might help re-stimulate that stuff. But what you're saying is, you think the peak population of Loudoun?
No, I think we'll probably stabilize it between 92 and 95.
And we're at, 8990 right now?
We're at 79001, so we have a few more.
No, schools. Schools.
Oh, number of schools, though.
I lost count.
I think it's right at 90, maybe 89, do you know?
There were 14 to go in total.
The CIP right now, there's maybe seven more.
Seven. And now there's six left.
Three or four elementary, one middle, two high schools.
But this doesn't include things like Brookfield Station. Who knows what they're going to do there?
All right, let's one at a time.
This is like a measurement because we saw peak school kids potentially. But in other areas like Fairfax County or Montgomery County or some other places, they're already doing some things, but has their population, school population, sort of peaked at some time, or is it kind of strong?
Their population is actually going up, and I think they're experiencing some of the same things that we have. We have areas in Loudoun, predominantly, say, in eastern Loudoun as well as in Leesburg, where we haven't had significant new housing, and yet we're seeing tremendous increases in our students. And again, it's housing and affordability issue that you're looking at. And so just because an area is built doesn't necessarily mean you don't have ongoing, enrollment issues and things like that.
So, I would say demographically, the region in the first 5 years, it was this way, and now it's going the other way in terms of Arlington, Alexandria.
All right, I'm going to bring this back to why we're here for this item. So, Michael, I'll give you a last question.
I'm going back to standards, which is...
Okay, we're going to take this back to why we're here on this item. So, everybody go to the agenda here, the two pages after the agenda. There is a page with the current capital facility standards, and there is a page with the proposed capital facility standards. So, Sam,
can I just ask a question about this, or do you want
to... Well, I want Sam to take 1 second to tell us why we're going from 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 standards to 3. In all cases, the building square footage is higher and the standard number of students is from the current top of the range plus a little higher. So explain the logic behind this before we ask questions.
Well, again, the practicalities that we've encountered as labs develop, there's been a need for larger school facilities, and I think what we're asking you to do is really adopt that standard. And you know, one of the things that we've experienced is that as our schools have increased in size, one of the things, we have a prototypical design, and in that, architect will say it holds X number of kids. And what we find is that when you actually move the kids in there and have the programs, the schools will adjust. And so what we have seen is some of our prototypical 928 student schools end up with capacity of around 1,000, maybe slightly more, sometimes less. Things that can affect that capacity might be the number of special education programs or regional programs that are at that school. What we have found, particularly in our high growth areas, when a new school opens, it will get and receive a disproportionate share of special education programs, and that'll drive its overall capacity down. But as that area grows, and those programs are relocated, the numbers tend to increase. And so what we're trying to do is provide, I think, a more realistic range that our facilities, as far as students, can have. And again, there have been changes. You begin looking at some of these schools. Typically, after a school's constructed, our construction department meets with the building principals, the teachers, to do an evaluation of what works and what doesn't. And even though, one of the differences that we have at J. Michael Lunsford, which was our first two-story school, to what we're going to be building now with MS7, based on some of that feedback, is the classroom numbers are the same, but the square footage in the halls and some of the other critical areas is increased to make it easier during class, changing periods and during class, things like that. So it's little things like that that we try to encompass or in this standard with these ranges, so that it does take into account the flexibility and the use that our facilities have. And again, what we're looking at on the acreage is, again, this is something that's standard, but again, with that two-story design, it gives us a lot more flexibility, and so we are able to build on that. Again, we just like to keep that the acreage figures more or less the same.
Currently, your current standard, your acreage is the same, whether it's one-story or two-story.
Correct.
So making that change doesn't seem to affect anything, because you're keeping the same acreage. We're just not calling one-story and two-story. So hang on. Michael had questions first, Toby.
So I was trying to get perspective on this, just because while initially I looked at it and said square footage is going up, number of kids is going up, when you look at the vacuum that we live in, which is the build-out of the county, which hasn't changed because the comp plan hasn't changed yet, you have six schools left to build, and it seems to me only one or two sites that you need left, right? 23 you have, 31 you have, ES28 you don't. MS7 you have.
No, ES28 is under construction. That's okay. The elementary
school. So you have that. MS7 you have the site.
Correct.
HS9 you don't.
No, we do.
HS11. Well, we haven't closed on it yet.
Okay.
Well, again, that contract's going to come to the Board of Supervisors at the beginning of the month. They're going to approve that.
Yeah.
What you have to understand is that we began looking at this capital facility, and especially long range. What we're not sure of right now is just what exactly the impacts might be of the Silver Line or any potential changes in, say, for example, the transition area. And so what we've done is we have placed some facilities there so that they're on the radar screen, but they might not ultimately be required for building. And again, if it's a Silver Line elementary school that may need to be constructed, we're the opinion right now, with the way the rules have been set up, that we'd be able to negotiate for a profit site for that need.
Right now, I'm with you. I'm with you 100%, because I think that these aren't going to impact where we are today very much, because there's only maybe one school site that you need left that you don't have. Where this is going to come into play is when the comp plan gets updated and how it gets applied to changes in the transition area, the urban, the place around the metro, which will have new analysis
with
it that will change the way we look at this. So I'm not sure I have a problem with your new standard.
Not much effect right now.
Because it's not going to really make any difference.
Right.
The column that you don't have here, which I'm thinking he has more worry about than I do, is what cost numbers are going to go in here for the bigger schools because you have more square footage. And where we've been used to, I won't get these right, was it 40 for an elementary, 60 for a middle, 120 for a high, or somewhere right near where those numbers are. I don't know what those new numbers are going to be because the square footage is going up, and I know that's a spring thing that we take a look at, but I'm guessing those numbers are going up. Is that right?
I really can't say. I mean, one of the things that I alluded to in this presentation was the sheer simple fact is that the board may ultimately decide in these metro areas they want to make these schools totally walkable. So what we might see are actually smaller facilities. So the overall cost, say for an elementary school, may go down in a metro area. Yeah, it's, again, I don't think we can really look at our current prototypical elementary, middle, or high school, which is really based on more of a suburban paradigm, and apply that to the Silver Line or any potential changes that we might see in the transition area.
And again, I'm with you, but I think if you look at a timeline, we're here. We're going to price this stuff out in the spring and redo the capital intensity factor. We're going to look at all these new opportunities, whether it's that the comp plan affects, and change some of the standards, and then we're to go through this again.
But we're not going to have the comp plan done by the comp
the second time around.
The comp plan is still 18 months, 16 months.
Right, so I'm saying the second time around we do this.
The second time around, yes.
Right, we'll look
but
at
not
it
the first time.
So this
right.
window is like this big, and I'm with you. All these assumptions will change once we get through the comp plan and figure out where we're going. So then it comes down to, and I guess we'll wait till the spring to see if the numbers are changing or not changing until we decide what new standards are. And if you're going up in square footage, I'm guessing your numbers have to go up. I mean, it just...
So you're building the argument we have about 3 or 4 a year snapshot, and the rest is floating around with a different standard.
Well, I'm really building the argument that there's not a whole lot left for the comp plan that we have now,
yeah, so
for when we meet in the spring to look at
argument.
When we start taking out what's in the cap, what's in the CIP numbers, all that stuff starts to come out. There's maybe one school site or two school sites that are left that are going to impact the CIF in the spring.
Right.
And then we're going to update the comp plan, and then we're going to need, you know, 12 more school sites or whatever, all of those things.
Maybe.
And that window is kind of a funny window.
Which means right changes now. Right now probably don't have much effect.
Don't have much effect.
Right.
That's exactly.
So, I'll be saying.
The one thing that hasn't changed as proposed is the acreage of the land available to put up these facilities. What's changed probably the standard if you got more pupils, and therefore the square footage that goes up. And I suspect that it's classrooms that are being added more so than programs, other activities that you normally do in the same acreage are still there, the ball fields, the other, I suspect, auditoriums and all that. So my question is, if you adopt this standard and you build these schools on the same amount of space, can you take a school that was built, let's say within the last 10 years, that has the acreage requirements and maybe even programs available, and add on to those schools that are there rather than buy a new school, maybe you still need a new school, but build them bigger, but can you take the schools that are here with the same acreage and relatively the same size buildings and add to those buildings rather than have to build a whole new facility?
Well, I think there may be potential for that, but I think we also have to look at where those schools that might be able to accommodate significant addition or renovation, are they even proximate to the areas where the kids are coming from?
Yeah.
I mean, it reminds me of long ago, people used to say, we have thousands of extra seats. Well, those thousands of extra seats are in Western Loudoun. They don't really help us much in the Brambleton area.
Well, like Brambleton, a lot of the kids, I think, went into the Leesburg area because maybe they had capacity or maybe they moved to somewhere else. And you've got to put it in proximity of your kids.
Yeah. But again, I mean, I don't think we're close to looking at those kinds of options if they're open and available to us, but I think it's also one that if you do have, we're talking about tripling densities in the metro, I mean, it's going to have some impact, but you don't know exactly what that may be.
Yeah.
But programmatically, your increase in square footage is because you want to have more students. It's not programming common area or public space or anything like that to have uses in schools that you don't have right now. You're increasing the size of schools because you're increasing the number of kids. Is that correct?
Yes.
And they're not increasing the acreage, so it's not like you're making more ball fields or more.
Well, they're going to go two stories.
I think Hobie's right. Most of this is probably classroom.
But, you know, even if you build a school in an area where you got that demand, that could change, too, in the future. And your kids are being generated somewhere else. It's almost like a moving target all the time.
Well, but this is why the school board has to do redistricting. And some areas that used to be crazy, like Ashburn, are very stable now. But now you see all the redistricting going down in Brambleton in these areas. They'll stabilize down the road. It's a matter of getting the right schools in the right places. But I think the point is, I think most of this is more classrooms. But let's not forget, the core of the school has to be able to accommodate the number of students.
Right.
And Broad Run was a perfect place to prove out the core could not accommodate the kids we had in there. Exactly. I mean, we had kids literally eating lunch from 9:30 in the morning to 2:30 in the afternoon, sitting on hallway floors where people are trying to change classes walking over the top of them. Because the core couldn't accommodate.
But that was such an older generation school.
Agreed.
And now you've got a new generation where hopefully you got the ability, if you want to add classrooms, you know, you have the ability to reasonably add classrooms and you have the core facilities there to support that.
Only if the demand student generation is near those older schools that you're going to add on to. Remember, there's a lot of operational costs in busing kids. You got to trade all these things off.
Right. The other functionality is, even though you think, well, you're going to make it more walkable, they're still not going to walk.
I was thinking that because I live on a cul-de-sac with five homes, and the four families that have children all drive individual kids. I can't get out of my neighborhood in the morning because all these cars with their children.
One fact I do know is that even though you you're going to make it walkable and you get all this stuff to make it walkable,
they're still not walking.
The school board has really been trying to emphasize walkability to the schools.
And we've gotten a lot more walk.
Yeah, elementary schools.
They've got more, but they also have a program called Safe Walk to Schools, and we've been trying to make transportation improvements to promote the ability for kids to walk more by fixing things like crosswalks and, you know, so forth. Okay, let's... Mr. Capretti.
I'll make a motion we accept the proposed capital facility standards for high school.
All right, motion is made by Mr. Capretti. Seconded. Hang on, Hobie. We have a the proposed on page 3.
Right.
Seconded by Mr. Lazaro. Any discussion, Michael?
No, I think in the short term this isn't going to impact us very
much. I don't think it's going to impact anything. Anybody else? All right, all in favor of the motion, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
I just want to say one
Hang on. Hobie, just be quiet for a minute. 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. Motion passes 11-0-3-2. Thank you. Wow, you never have 11. That's great. All right, we have one more thing to do.
Thank you, Sam. You're very good.
Thank you, Sam, but don't leave. We need you to vote.
No, I'm not going anywhere.
All right, guys, so here's what's happened. This is our last meeting, last item until the spring. We'll send out some suggested meeting dates later. However, all these votes we've taken are really kind of like what the board does when we do the budget. We take votes work session after work session, but guess what? They're only straw votes. And eventually, in our very, very, very last budget meeting, we take a vote to confirm all those straw votes. So if you look in your packets, starting on, and they didn't number the pages, but it's actually starting on page 16. They didn't number the packet consecutively, okay? It's starting on page 16. It's labeled 1 of 9. For the next several pages, it shows all the votes we took by area. And there's several pages of them. Amazingly, we took a lot of votes. And if you notice, most of them were unanimous. There were a few with one dissenter. Probably the biggest one is we had a vote that was 7-2-4. And that was over the equestrian facility. And we had a vote that was 6-3-4. And we had a vote that was 6-3-4 over district parks. But everything else was either unanimous or one dissenter. So if somebody would like to make this easy, you can go to the third page from the back. At the very bottom of the page in small bold print, There is a suggested motion if somebody would like to do this.
So the motion is proposed.
Second.
Let's read the motion into the record. I want to be. This is the one I want to be clear, because this final some concrete.
I got questions and discussion.
I got it.
Yes.
Okay. I got it.
I move to recommend that the fiscal impact committee adopt the straw votes taken at FIC meetings as summarized in this chart as the fiscal impact committee's formal recommendations.
All right. Motion's made by Mr. Lazaro. Is there a second?
Second.
Ms. Michael.
Kruger.
All right, opening.
Thank you. It's good stuff. I appreciate the staff's hard work.
Okay, discussion or questions?
I wish everybody have a Thanksgiving after we do
it. I have one question.
We'll do that at the end of the meeting, but thank you. Okay, Michael.
I have one question. Just in the action on the TCI on the roads.
Give us a page.
We did talk about
doing
this, page 3 of 9, fourth box down. We did talk about our consistency of what we've done, which is subtracting out what we need today. And I just want to make sure incremental development is what you mean there. Okay, just to be clear on that.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, Mr. Miller offered a substitute motion to approve the methodology. Staff is to come up with options regarding commercial costs and incremental development. That is what passed.
Right, and I just wanted to make sure incremental was what we always do, which is how much do we need today with what we have, and then you deal with incremental. Because transportation hadn't subtracted that out of
that's the correct.
Billion six.
You're correct.
Okay, I'm good.
Other discussion?
This question, point of information, apologize for not being there for the equestrian vote. What was the wording on the equestrian vote?
It was simply a vote as to whether we would move forward with it as a capital standard or not.
And the answer was
no.
Good, thank you.
However, I believe we said we would revisit it later. Now, I will, because you weren't there, I will tell you that in my 5 years, we've visited several times already. Okay, so it's a gift that keeps on giving, all right? But the vote was, and I think, Michael, I think you made the motion to keep it out.
I think I did.
I think you did. It says in here, but I think you did.
I just wanted
to. Actually, it might have been
did you. Isn't it in here?
I think it was Ryan. It's in here. Hang on.
I thought I made the motion.
Thank you. My question was
my house has been egged a couple of times, so I'm pretty
okay.
sure I made the motion.
Any other questions or discussion, Hobie?
As it relates to the transportation, we talk about the methodology, but it's not being utilized as a standard to go forward with things.
It's got to come back.
So we got to come back.
It's got to come back.
That's correct.
Mm-hmm. That's correct.
Okay. Yep, you're right. Other discussion?
The school standards that we adopted are
part of this. They are what we just adopted for the schools are a part of this motion.
It's not school generation numbers, it's the standards.
That's in the spring.
It's the capital facility standards.
Right. Just making sure that that's all. Yeah.
Well, there, if you notice,
I saw the 11
pages.
Fill in.
Yeah.
Pages. It would be. Here we go. It's page 7 of 9. That's essentially what we just filled in with the first straw vote earlier tonight. So the answer is yes. Other discussion? Seeing none, all in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries 11-02. Anybody else have anything they want to bring up?
Nope.
All right. Everybody have great holidays.
The only thing I will bring up is no more 5 o'clock meeting. No more 5:30 meeting, Toby.
Yeah.
That's right. We'll fix that. All right. Everybody have a great holiday. We are adjourned. We'll see you in the spring.
Are you doing it? Are you doing it?